Hello, friends and listeners. It's your boy, Will Meneker. Chiming in here to apologize for the slight delay in this week's content. I hope you can understand we've been very busy preparing for and performing sold-out shows to widespread acclaim and love, so I hope you can understand. But for this week's show, we are happy to bring you a recording of our live event from this past Saturday at the Genius headquarters in Gowanus, Brooklyn. Just a few things there were, because it was a live show, there were some audio-visual cues that you may not pick up on in this recording, but let me just run them down real quick. We, of course, came out to the Turkish national anthem and a big photo of our boy Erdogan right behind us. Then there was a brief 10 to 15 seconds of hate on the traitor Gulen. In about the middle of the show, we did premiere our Chapo short film, Over the Top, the Chapo success story. That's about 6 minutes. You'll hear the audio and I think get most of the jokes, but we'll also include a link where you can watch the entire short film for yourself. Then during the Diggler section, there's sort of an inkblot test that Sam Chris administers. And the inkblots he was shown were a photo of Bernie Sanders, a photo of just a circle, a photo of a female judge, women's feet, and a grave. I think that's just about it. The only other thing is we had little slides. The voice messages at the end were accompanied by pictures. But if you're a listener of the show, you will immediately get who all of the angry voicemails are from. So please enjoy our live show from Saturday, September 24th at the Genius headquarters in Brooklyn. And if you are listening to this today on Monday, the 26th, there's still time for you to come out tonight at Caroline's on Broadway to see Chapo and Virgil Texas do a live commentary on the first presidential debate. So enjoy this week's show, and thanks again to Genius, Virgil Texas, and Sam Chris. Bye. Ladies and gentlemen, will you please rise for the performance of our national anthem? Gender Studies Department at King Faisal University in Saudi Arabia, Felix Biederman!
Hey, everybody. Just got one thing to say. People may say that I'm dying, but I'm here at a live show.
Next up, we've got the round mound of rebound, Matt Chrisman.
To the Charlotte Police Department, I say, I may not be Steven Soderbergh, but I'm sick of lies about videotape.
Next up, local cut-up, Virgil, Texas.
I may not be Jonathan Franzen, but tonight the record will receive some corrections.
And last but not least, the editor-in-chief
of everyday feminism, Will Miniker.
I may not be swinging a liquid sword, but I am a rap genius.
Hello, welcome everybody to the Gowanus Ideas Festival.
Are you guys ready for some disruption?
Yeah. I want to say a big thank you to all the girlfriends who allowed themselves to be dragged here tonight. You all, now, they owe you big time.
This is actually goes against their contract stipulation. Way too many women.
I see a lot of men in here tonight without beards, and I'd just like to say that that's haram. Please leave. First off, we have to give a big thank you to the MacArthur Genius Grant Foundation for bestowing this honor upon us. We'll be giving you our bank account details after the show.
Well, I took my portion in Dallas Barbecue gift cards.
No, but to get a genius grant is, you know, it's amazing. It's a lifelong dream. And it's dedicated to all the teachers who said I wasn't going to be shit, I wasn't going to amount to shit, and who gave me B's and B pluses on what was clearly A caliber material. Next up, I just want to thank the Hell's Angels for doing security tonight at the event. I'm glad we paid you in advance. And last but not least, a big shout out to this evening's musical act, Great White. Now, before we get started this evening, I just want to say, is there anyone in the audience tonight from the New York Times? Oh, okay, maintaining cover, very good, right. I see. But we expect this to get written up.
That's the globalist New York Times.
We expect this to get written up in the styles section. I better see it next weekend under the headline, In Brooklyn, a new Turkish coup?
Have you guys ever noticed the New York Times never seems to run on globalist holidays like Rosh Hashanah or Yom Kippur?
One of my little birds has informed me that there is a reporter from Vox.com in the house tonight. Ooh. Could you identify yourself, please, as a Vox.com reporter? Okay, good. We will be bullying you later. So.
I really, when we see on the screen the glorious words, Chapo Trap House, colon, an explainer, we'll know that we have made it.
And thanks to our boy, Recep. Without him, none of this would be possible. Yeah, you know, I assume the New York Times is in the house. This is a big media event. And the reason I ask, because I sort of like to say, it's a nice paper of record you guys have there. It'd be a shame if someone decided to annotate it. How many of you guys have been reading Felix and Virgil's annotations of the news on News Genius?
Yeah. Thank you. I just want everyone to know that I would have done it too, but I cannot actually write.
I can barely. Have you read mine?
I learned to read for the purpose of reading like Ross Douthat.
Is Ross in the house tonight? Is Ross here? We'll be talking about him later. But
by the way, after party on a sailboat tonight.
if you see a guy in a anti-trans hamster wheel, that's Rod Dreher.
The sexuality at a podcast live show, just like at sea, is simply blurred.
Sailboat on the Gowanus Canal after party, after the show. Rap Genius, of course, it started out as Rap Genius, and it was the company that was started so that rap music could be explained to people like David Brooks and Ross Douthat. So I think it's only fitting. I think it's only fitting that we kick off tonight's show by turning those high powers of perception back around on them. So, any fans of the Chapo reading series in the house? All right, now for the live show, this can't be just, you know, some nobody online that we're choosing to mock and ridicule. We would need some big turkeys. And for that, we got to go straight to the New York Times op-ed page. And I want to begin with a David Brooks column that ran last week. And we're going to annotate it for you live now. We're going to give you the insight to this creative process. The name of the op-ed is The Uses of Patriotism by David Brooks.
We're off to a great start.
This guy, he's got a lot of uses for patriotism, and he's going to let you know all about
it. It's like
them.
Formula 401. The original title for this essay, by the way, was called Blacks Listen Up, but I thought it was like a little much.
And by the way, this is about the national anthem. We did make note of everyone who wasn't standing during the national anthem. You're PKK, you've been identified, you've been tagged. You'll be taken care of later. Oh, yeah, by the way, before we... sorry, I forgot. We need the 2 minutes of hate on the traitor here. So everyone just...
Boo! Fuck you! Destroyer of the nation! Traitor!
This is 30 seconds of hate, you know, because if the only thing George Orwell didn't predict about the future is that everyone born in 1984 would have ADD. So I think a good 10, 15 seconds of hate.
Thank you,
let's move
smartphones.
On.
Yeah. You know, I'm starting to think that those smartphones actually might make us dumber.
Imagine if Orwell had apps. Well, you're going to read this column, so.
Oh, wait. The Gulen Charter School Network was a sponsor of this evening's show, so I'm sorry. I think we should have.
Also, we forgot another sponsor, the Omidyar Network.
And the Haqqani Network.
All right, let's go back to let's go back to D. Brooks here. The uses of patriotism. This column is directed at all the high school football players around the country who are pulling a Kaepernick, kneeling during their pregame national anthems to protest systemic racism. I'm going to try to persuade you that what you're doing is extremely counterproductive.
Rethink this.
You do not
Rethink
know how
it.
Bad you look.
Rethink this, please. For the love of God.
Guys, David Brooks is talking. Let's,
I don't know how David Brooks is able to write a column with his hands on his hips, yelling in his driveway.
As Oliver Cromwell said, I beseech you, in the bowels of Christ, think that you may rethink this.
But I was just going to say, what I like about this opening salvo is it's based on a premise that there are high school athletes in the country that are going to read David Brooks' column and really take it to heart.
Hey, man. Hey, dude. That's how you stay keep premium shape. You do two-a-days all week, then you party on Friday, party on Saturday, and Sunday morning, it's the New York Times op-ed page.
I remember when I was a high school student in Chicago, and we would, you know, you do what every high school student does, and you drunk drive in your friend's Jeep, reading each other Ross Duttat and David Brooks. If you really liked a girl, you would email her a link to a David Brooks article about commitment.
Yo, sup, girl? Thomas Friedman had a really interesting point about what globalization is doing to industry in India. And you might want to hook up with that.
And if you're lucky, you might get a hat tip at the end of the night.
Some people go straight for arts and leisure. I go straight for the throat of David Brooks. Okay, he continues. When Europeans first settled this continent, they had two big thoughts.
Murder. Murder.
Holy shit.
Murder. Rivers of blood.
Did David Brooks' new intern, Saxon Wrath, write that part?
The first of those thoughts...
Murder?
was that God murder. Had called them to create murder. A good and just society
Through
on
murder.
This continent.
By murdering.
The second...
Murder?
Was that they were screwing it up. So he's already, you know... It's
really?
Already a contrarian
wait a
take.
Wait a minute. They were thinking that they were going to screw it up?
Yeah.
Boy, no, I'm going to take the three-month voyage across the Atlantic Ocean and risk death, but I might fuck up along the way, any one of which will lead to my immediate demise.
What do we...
I'm going to roll those dice.
Exactly. This is an American show because, as we always said, failure is success. So the people who came on the Mayflower were expecting to fail.
Yeah, if you guys know anything about the Puritans, they were kicked out of England for their religious vision, which was they would watch 8 Mile and be like, yo, you can fail on your way to succeed, but you're on your way to succeed.
Also, that you should not lose a job due to DUIs.
Yeah.
He continues, the early settlers put intense moral pressure on themselves. They filled the air with angry Jeremiads about how badly things were going and how much they needed to change. This harsh self-criticism was the mainstream voice that defined American civilization. As the historian Perry Miller wrote, under the guise of this mounting wail of sinfulness, this incessant and never successful cry for repentance, the Puritans launched themselves upon the process
of
Americanization.
I'm picturing like sort of black and white, like an infomercial of a Puritan settler not murdering an indigenous person, and it's you cross out with an X and you go, there's got to be a better way.
They would come back from burning down a Pequot village and they'd be like, all right, guys, that was okay, but it could have been way better.
By 1776, this fusion...
New York City! I'm Hamilton,
baby!
I punched the bursar!
Are you Aaron Burr, sir?
Show of hands of who punched the bursar!
No one? Oh, wow, none of them.
This fusion of radical hope and radical self-criticism had become the country's civic religion. This civic religion was based on a moral premise that all men are created equal... and pointed toward a vision of a promised land, a place where your family or country of origin would have no bearing on your opportunities.
Skin color,
provided,
on the
provided,
other hand.
Of course, that your country of origin was Europe and not the continental United States.
Skin color, on the other hand, yeah.
It's amazing how they tolerated any type of people, whether they were Scots-Irish,
German,
Prussian,
Welsh, Cornish.
Even Bavarian.
Yeah, really open-minded.
Over this, if you're a high school athlete, you're like, your mind is already sort of rounding the corner. You're thinking of taking the knee, but you're sort of like... over the centuries, this civic religion fired a fervent desire for change. Every significant American reform movement was shaped by it. Abraham Lincoln wrote, if ever I feel the soul within me elevate and expand those dimensions not entirely unworthy of its almighty architect, it is when I contemplate the cause of my country. So this is good. If you quote Abraham Lincoln, he's like, oh, that'll fill up about half a paragraph. So I'll just keep this going. And then,
he got paid for every word that Abraham Lincoln wrote 150 years ago there. That's a hell of a fucking racket.
I remember in his weed column when he was like 47 years ago, I smoked weed. It wasn't that big of a deal.
Oh, and look who makes an appearance now. Martin Luther King Jr.
Hell yeah.
Martin Luther King Jr. Can we get a round of applause for MLK Jr.? Yeah.
I like to call him Dr. King, personally.
But can we also get a round of applause for Martin Luther? We're this is an anti-papist show.
Can we also get a round of applause for Martin? It was this TV show that appeared on Fox.
Damn, Gina.
Such a good sitcom.
Borat.
But Martin Luther King Jr. sang the national anthem before his I Have a Dream speech and then quoted the Declaration of Independence within it. So take that.
Shut
Colin.
The fuck up.
Take that, Colin Kaepernick.
Maybe Colin Kaepernick should take a page out of Martin Luther King's book and prove the police's point with their own logic, with the Constitution.
This American creed gave people...
Wait a minute, what? How can there be a creed? It's just been a bunch of, like, just gibberish sentences. What creed? radical belief and also doubt?
No, the creed is the song.
It's the book. It's the belief that you're
fucking
up. That's what he's saying. America just we just fuck up a lot.
That's not a creed.
That's a creed, yeah.
No.
Like, oh, oops. That's literal creed.
Yeah, my family came. Our heraldic symbol was just like a guy looked like, uh-oh.
All things go back to Eminem, obviously. And if you guys remember the Eminem song, Love the Way You Lie, where he said the, painful line, there won't be a dry eye in the house after I say this. I see you leaving out the window. I guess that's why they call it window pane.
Wait a minute, that's actually a line for that
song?
Yeah,
it's tattooed
Holy
across
shit.
My stomach. But that, like, the toxic relationship portrayed in that video is American values. Like, when you punch a wall because you're so pissed because she's going to leave you if you get another DUI, that's what America is.
I have to say that my ignorance of hip-hop as a culture really kind of, it comes through in moments like this when I get to, like, realize, oh, this is all really stupid.
Well, I wouldn't really say that not knowing about Eminem isn't not knowing about hip-hop. I'd say it's not knowing about life.
I could definitely use annotations, that's for sure.
If only there were someone to do that.
That's fifth floor, I think.
Back to the American Creed, which is basically just a song. This creed gave people a sense of purpose and a high ideal to live up to.
How can you have a purpose if it's like it will come to nothing, right? Like the whole thing is nihilistic in its base.
Let me finish.
It's terrible.
This creed bonded them together. Whether their other identities, Irish-American, boo.
Get him out of here.
Jewish-American, African-American.
Hold on a minute.
Were still part of the same story.
No, they were not.
What are you talking about? Yeah, every good story needs some really depressing shit.
Irish people did not start out as white Americans.
There was slaves.
Jewish people did not start out as white Americans. And they became white Americans in both cases. Why?
Because of a
song.
Because
they weren't black.
Because they were singing the song.
No, because they were not black. Black is always the thing that defined whiteness by its opposite.
Okay, now raise your hands if you know the real history about how Irish people were slaves in America. we had it worse than probably any other.
You know, I haven't watched a show or read a book about it, but there was a guy at a bar once who had a big clover leaf tattoo on his arm, and then he had a big long thing about how the Irish were slaves on it, and I just read it from there.
That was the first time that you and I met.
Yeah.
It's interesting because obviously Irish Americans have suffered the most of any group in human history, but they never talk about it.
We're fucking humble, yo. We're fucking humble. All we want is the Pats to win. We're not asking for reparations. We just want Tom Brady back as quarterback.
The path to whiteness for marginalized groups in America, it's also like 8 Mile. And if you remember in 8 Mile, when Eminem, he chokes at the beginning, that's like when any group gets to America for the first time. But then when he beats them all in a battle and he earns everyone's respect, that's when you're fully assimilated into American culture.
Okay. Here's my impression of the Jewish immigrant story in 8 Mile, as 8 Mile.
That's true. Pour one out.
That's true. The music, the moment, the people, the chosen. Okay. Sorry, that was a Jewish Eminem. little character I do. Back to David Brooks. Tip your bartenders, by the way, people.
Yeah, tip your bartenders.
The bartender is a subscriber. Support your own. Give until it hurts. Over the years, America's civic religion was nurtured. Was nurtured the way all religions are nurtured.
Murder?
by sharing moments of reverence. Americans performed the same rituals on Thanksgiving and July 4th. They sang the national anthem and said the pledge in unison. They listened to the same speeches on national occasions and argued out the great controversies of our history. Okay. All of this evangelizing had a big effect. As late as 2003, Americans were the most patriotic people on earth. There's no way they're more more patriotic than North Korea as of 2003.
Well, no. You. It's like midichlorians. Like patriotism is like a thing in your blood, and you can quantify it with a blood test.
But this is he's quoting according to the University of Chicago's National the Pinochet Research Center. Recently, the civic religion has been under assault, just like every other kind of religion.
Our values are under attack.
Our values are under attack, people. Many schools no longer teach American history.
What?
What?
Oh, God. Yeah, no. This is true. I have many young cousins, and they have gender class. They have apologizing for white people class, but they don't have any American history.
I talked to my kid. I talked to my
submission to Islam.
I talked to my young relatives, and they know, how to make a trans bathroom, how to make a trans inclusive bathroom, but they think that the signers of the Declaration of Independence were the McDonaldland characters. It's a goddamn travesty.
By the way, shout out to Genius for the all-gender bathrooms. That's a plus one. Negative one because it's really fucking hard to do cocaine in them, so you better. Okay, Okay, yeah, no. Schools no longer teach American history. Do you think people just tell David Brooks shit like this when he's at like some pain?
He learns about it at the Applebee's salad bar.
Yeah, David Brooks is all his anonymous sources are like your uncle's emailing him shit. Like, well, wow, look at that. This guy put a flag on his Christmas tree and the police killed him.
David Brooks fetishizes a simple middle American person who he has literally never met.
All of his sources are just teenagers pranking him. They're like, we don't learn history anymore, but we really want to hear from you. Like, the whole team wants to read this column. You got to write it.
So students never learn the facts and tenets of their creed. He's back to this creed again. Hold on. This is a great line. A globalist mentality teaches...
I'll tell you right now!
They are citizens of the world rather than citizens of America.
I never would have thought it, but David Brooks has realized that the globalist conspiracy, it goes too far, and he's ready to sign up for the fight against the globalists.
You know what?
He's ready to get my vitality serum.
You know what? He's right, though. These people control the media, they control the banks, and now they're going into the schools telling our kids they can't learn their own history.
I'll tell you right now, David Brooks took some of my vitality potion, and he was able to knock over a fire hydrant with a stream of urine.
Critics like Ta-Nehisi Coates have arisen.
Ooh,
yeah. Between the world and pee. Arguing that the American reality is so far from the American creed, he's getting paid by the word creed. The big creed has sponsored him, as to negate the value of the whole thing. The multiculturalist mindset values racial, gender, and ethnic identities and regards national identities as reactionary and exclusive. Gee, I wonder why.
Yeah. Maybe because it is. I don't know.
I mean, what bad has ever happened when, like, say, I guess Germans just really love Germany?
There's been a sharp decline in American patriotism. Today, only 52% of Americans are, quote, extremely proud of their country. That is such a high fucking number.
Every one of those
extremely
people should
proud.
Every one of those people should be kept in a fucking dog cage.
Do you guys realize that a little over half of the country are unbearable assholes?
Yeah. Half of the country are psychotics.
A historical low.
Thank Christ.
Did they have Gallup polling in 1864?
Among those 18 to 29, only 34% are extremely
you
proud.
You goddamn millennials!
Oh my god.
So sick of you people!
Americans know less about their history and creed and are less likely to be fervent believers in it. He's just repeating himself.
If this keeps up, nobody is going to want to fuck the flag at the Betsy Ross Museum. I don't want to live in that future.
Sitting out the anthem takes place in the context of looming post-nationalism. Listen up, high school kids.
Star Trek, motherfucker.
You are in a context of looming post-nationalism. When we sing the national anthem, we're not commenting on the state of America. We're fortifying our foundational creed. We're expressing gratitude for our ancestors and what they left us. We're expressing commitment to the nation's ideals, which have not yet been fulfilled. If we don't transmit that creed through shared displays of reverence, we will have lost the system that has always motivated reform. We will lose the sense that we're all in this together. We'll lose the sense of shared loyalty to ideas bigger and more transcendent than our short lives.
Yeah, I'm going to say
that
everybody I've ever heard of who is shitting their pants about people not standing for the national anthem, they seem ripe for reform. Those people are like down. Yeah, police reform, hell yeah. I'll tell you, that Colin Kaepernick, he's not standing up. I just get so mad when I see him. But I'll tell you, if you brought me a package of broad reforms designed to bring about a radical decline in income inequality based on race, I'd sign up.
Did you guys notice that the last few lines in there, it's like the David Brooks version of the needle in the hay scene from Royal Tenenbaums? Is just opening up and it's flowing out. Why did you try to kill yourself? Because we're losing our shared identity.
If these common rituals are insulted, other people won't be motivated to right your injustices because they'll be less likely to feel that you're part of their story. People will become strangers to one another. And
yeah, that hasn't happened.
And will interact in cold, instrumentalist terms. Again, he's thinking about
his divorce again. This guy honestly thinks that everything outside of, you know, like the Eastern Corridor is like fucking Mayberry and okay. It's being destroyed by these outside forces. Like, I'm sorry, I'm from the Midwest. Nobody there gives a shit about one another.
No, we don't.
We all are like stewing in our own private resentments and hates, and we see other people and we're like, what the fuck are you doing? That's my fucking parking space, asshole.
The Midwest is like a perpetual motion machine that only runs on Oxycontin, Monster Energy, and resentment.
This is David's big finish here. This is where he gets to the nub of the issue. He says,
"This is where he gets to the nub."
He's warning all of us right now. He's warning Colin Kaepernick and any high school student who may be inspired by him.
David's fixing the nut, everybody. Yeah. The first four rows will get wet.
He says, "You will strengthen Donald Trump's ethnic nationalism, which erects barriers between Americans and which is the dark opposite of America's traditional universal nationalism."
So nationalism brings us together and separates us? Yeah. Almost as though nationalism is only coherent if it has an other that can be focused on as a like a definitional like difference, a negation of what you are?
As Sting once said, love can mend your life, but it can also break your heart.
Very true.
No, Matt, he's responding to you. He says, I hear you when you say you're unhappy with the way things are going in America.
Oh, that's relieving.
But the answer... This okay.
Now I don't have to email him.
But the answer to what's wrong in America is America.
I knew it.
That's the thing. Like, when you have cancer, you just, like, drink a big fucking glass of cancer.
I am always telling women that I have cancer.
We have a crisis of solidarity. I guess he's a socialist now. this makes it hard to solve every other problem we have. When you stand and sing the national anthem, you are building a little solidarity, and you're singing a radical song about a radical place.
Oh, my God.
Scene!
Jesus Christ.
It seems like the most rebellious thing you can do is follow the rules.
When in the South they were resisting desegregation by fucking paving over public swimming pools so that they wouldn't have to integrate them. That was solidarity as fuck. There's so much solidarity going
when
on.
When Mayor Richard J. Daley built the Dan Ryan as a concrete moat in between Irish and Black Chicagoans, that solidarity. Was like there was solidarity. It was like you can solidarity. Both use this highway.
Yeah.
Hey, every story needs paragraph and section breaks, just like every people also basically needs to do.
Yeah, same thing.
Separate. David Brooks, ladies and gentlemen, let's give him a round of applause. Now, we're gonna keep it rolling now with number two. This is another New York Times op-ed, but that is basically, it makes the same point that David Brooks is making in this, which is, he was like,
That like every anti-Trump conservative argument of the past year can be boiled down to, That's it. It's an inarticulate grunt.
He's making subtly the same point, which is be careful about all of this, rootless cosmopolitanism.
Globalism.
Because if it goes too far, you may end up with a reactionary form of government that I'm also kind of okay with.
It would be a shame if we had to throw you people out of helicopters.
Okay, this is from our boy, Boss Ross Douthat.
Yeah!
The Harvard plug in the house.
Freeway Ross, real hip-hop Ross Douthat.
Brat. Okay, I know you all probably saw this one. This one got a lot of burn because it involved television personalities.
Right, yeah, and all of the libs like lost their shit because they love their celebs.
This is the libs treated this column like conservatives when people like attacked Chris Kyle.
No, it's
Samantha
true.
Samantha Bee is the liberal Chris Kyle.
Because Like, I used to think the celebs were like the troops, but it's a little more involved.
They're more courageous.
The troops are to celebs as operators are to comedians on late night. So, like, your Samantha Bees and Jon Stewart, like, those guys are like your Delta Force snipers. You're Chris Kyles. Like, they're the highest level.
Yeah, with Jon Stewart, they're like, it says here that you obliterated more men than any other person in comedy history. How do you feel about that? He says, oh, that's not me. I think about all the people I couldn't obliterate.
In this column, Ross is sort of like the bad sniper in American Sniper, and he's putting his sights on Samantha Bee. This is Clinton's Samantha Bee problem. Ross writes, when the histories of the Trump era are written from exile in Justin Trudeau's Canada, they will record that it was none other than Jimmy Fallon who brought down the Republic. Or so you might have thought, at least, listening to the furious liberal reactions of Fallon's willingness to treat Donald Trump like any other late-night guest that week, kidding around with him, mussing up his comb-over, and cackling maniacally for 2 minutes in a row. Now, I just added that, but... I mean, this is tough, because I actually kind of agree with Ross on this point. Like, I gotta, give the devil his
due. There was that three-day period when I woke up and all the Hillary men and the libs were just so frightened by Jimmy Fallon. They were like, Jimmy Fallon is their Sturmer, the modern era.
Yeah, Peter Dow set up a checkpoint outside the NBC studios.
He says, but the Democratic Party's problem in the age of Trump isn't really Jimmy Fallon. Its problem is Samantha Bee. Not Bee alone, of course, but the entire phenomenon that she embodies. The rapid colonization of new cultural territory by ascendant social liberalism. It sounds like a Maoist right now. Yeah. It's weird.
You know how many people watch Samantha Bee? I looked this up.
Okay, how many?
600,000 people.
Yeah, it's not that many people.
It's no one. More people like retweet Drill, like saying, I have a small pebis or something.
I do want to continue with this theme of Maoist Ross Dudat, where the village is the ocean, but the villagers are George Allen Swaggerbait.
The culture industry has always tilted leftward, but the swing towards social liberalism among younger Americans and the simultaneous surge of activist energy on the left have created a new dynamic in which areas once considered relatively apolitical now have or are being pushed to have an overtly left-wing party
line. Wait a minute. What things that used to be considered apolitical? Late-night talk shows on TBS? Thing that literally didn't exist before 2 years ago?
I remember when I could watch Seth Meyers with my daughter and not have to explain to her what Congress was.
Well, I remember when I got to sit down with the family and watch Frank Caliendo's sketch show on TBS. And it was just some good fun. We didn't have to talk about abortion.
Whom amongst us can forget those just nights where you didn't focus on the R's or the D's and you and your common law wife could just watch Lil Bush on Comedy Central?
On late night television, it was once understood that David Letterman...
There were two shows! God, this is what's so fucking stupid about this. There's a million shows now because there's a million channels. And he's fetishizing this past where like, whoa, Johnny Carson. That was all of it. There were two shows. There were three networks. People had to put fucking tinfoil on their goddamn antennas to be able to see anything.
You don't know how bad you look. There was also Jack Parr.
David Letterman was beloved by coastal liberals, and Jay Leno was more of a middle American taste. But neither man was prone to delivering hectoring monologues in the style of the Daily Show alums. Hey, Mavis, you heard about this, the Social Security privatization? I think it's a bad idea. Fallon's apolitical shtick.
Kevin, I don't know what you think, but I think America deserved 9/11.
He goes on, I'm skipping a little bit. He talks about John Oliver and Stephen Colbert and Trevor Noah, blah, blah, blah.
Cable.
But he says it isn't just late night TV. Cultural arenas and institutions that were always liberal are being prodded or dragged further to the left. Awards shows are being pushed to shed their genteel limousine liberalism and embrace the race, gender, sexual identity agenda in full.
I am so sick.
Fuck the Emmys, yo.
Yo, Who else is sick of trying to watch the Tonys and you're just trying to watch Hamilton, but the Nation of Islam is there pushing their agenda?
I do have to say that I was a little grossed out when the Emmys introduced their best televised abortion category.
When? At what point did the Tonys embrace the homosexual agenda?
Meanwhile, institutions that were seen as outside or sideways to political debate have been enlisted in the culture war. The tabloid industry gave us the apotheosis of Caitlyn Jenner, and ESPN gave her its Arthur Ashe Award.
Yeah, you know, I'm sitting in my home in Allentown, Pennsylvania. I'm the guy, the sheriff's knocking on my door because they're going to evict me. My daughter just died of a fentanyl overdose. And I'm just going, they gave the Arthur Ashe Award to Caitlyn Jenner. What the fuck?
Yeah, it says, the NBA, NCAA, and ACC, nobody's idea of progressive forces usually, are acting as enforcers on behalf of gay and transgender rights.
That's true.
I'm so sick.
They're using their young, like, athletic, just strong student bodies to enforce the transgender law.
I'm so sick of when I'm trying to watch SEC football and they bring John Cruden on and he just talks about trans issues for an hour. It's really weird. I don't like.
No, the next one is, I think, actually Ross's most telling line. He says, but even the NFL is having its Black Lives Matter moment, thanks to Colin Kaepernick. He's saying, even the NFL, a sport that is 70% black guys playing it. I mean, if he had said even croquet is having their Black Lives Matter moment, that would be one thing. But it's a sport where 70% of the players are African American.
Well, yeah,
and 100% of the owners are white.
The players, the watchers are
100%
white.
100% of the owners.
I mean, well, the subtext of this whole thing
Kraft is Russian.
Oh, I'm sorry. Well, no. My apologies. No, the subtext of these whole two paragraphs are just like, I'm sorry, but in my mind, professional sports are hotbeds of bigotry, so what happened here?
For the left, these are clearer signs of cultural gains, cultural victory. But the scale and swiftness of those victories have created two distinctive political problems for the Democratic Party. First, within the liberal tent, they have dramatically raised expectations for just how far left our politics can move, while insulating many liberals from the harsh realities of political disagreement in this sprawling 300-plus million-person republic. Among millennials, blah, 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 unquestioned.
Oh, God damn it.
Thus,
if you see a millennial on the road, kill him.
I'm going to skip a little bit, but he says, the spirit of political cultural rebellion is obviously crucial. He's talking about how, like, all these things have become so mainstream that now you're a rebel if you go against them.
You know what's cool in a world where everyone isn't racist? To be racist.
He's saying a feeling of cultural rebellion is obviously crucial to Trump's act. As James Parker wrote in The Atlantic, he's occupying a space in American politics that is uniquely transgressive, volatile, carnivalesque, and from a certain angle, punk rock. The alt-right columnist Steve Saylor, anyone know who Steve Saylor is here?
Hell yeah.
He's very concerned about the phrenology guy. Yeah.
He's very concerned about white.
I think he coined the phrase "race realist." He's like the Sex Pistols. Parker suggests Trump is out to upend the culture, but in this case,
I thought they just wanted.
But
to sell
in this
records.
Case, it's the culture of institutionalized political correctness and John Oliver explaining the news to you forever.
I love that.
Wait, hold on. I just want to say, Ross is actually going to follow up on this by stabbing Samantha Bee to death in an amphetamine-induced hysteria in the Chelsea Hotel.
See, the thing is that, like, there is something to this if you are one of the coastal elites. Like, yeah, the culture is sort of hegemonically opposed to your conservatism. But if you're in the rest of the country, you're not having this shit put in your face. You don't have HBO. You know, it doesn't fucking matter to you.
Okay, I just wanted one more line from this. He says, But if liberals are fortunate to be facing a Johnny Rotten figure in this presidential campaign.
Vienna calling the Turk lusts for it.
I remember when the Sex Pistols would get rowdy and like trash in non-gender bathroom.
They are still having trouble putting him away. And there, this is a great line. He says, if he were somewhat less volatile and bigoted and gross, liberalism would be poised to close its era of cultural ascendance by watching all three branches of government pass back into conservative hands. Now, Ross is kind of right about that, but where he's wrong is if he wasn't so gross, bigoted, and volatile, he wouldn't be the fucking Republican nominee for president.
It's true. Like, imagine, you guys all remember him coming down the escalator, and everyone was like, oh, everyone's laughing for a minute. But then he got on the stage and he's like, immigrants are raping everyone. And he became hugely popular. If he had come out like Steve Forbes and said, I gotta tell you everybody, the deficit is too big. It's ridiculous. This deficit, it's gigantic. We got to make it smaller, everybody. We got to get together and do it. He would not have led wire to wire the way that he did.
Okay. I think we can put to bed David Brooks, Ross Douthat, two ducks, roast it for you.
Go to sleep,
live here. Okay. Next up, we have something very special for you guys. We have the premiere, the world premiere.
Of this URL, so get your phones out.
You guys all click on that. It is the passage to the afterlife.
We will not take your personal information and use it for fishing expeditions and Nigerian scams. We promise.
The premiere of the Chapo short film. It was directed by a personal friend of ours. I'll just call him Marty. But here we are. For now, the Chapo short film. We'll be back in a second.
Oh, can we get the lights, please?
I feel as beautiful as I am on the inside. As someone once said, with great power comes some responsibility, and I embrace some of the some responsibility that comes with our power, but not all of it, obviously.
If everyone was born blind and just stayed that way, and you had to earn your sight by performing deeds, then you sort of earn your place in life. And that's kind of what voluntary celibacy is to us.
If you ask someone if they're a cop, they have to tell you. We believe that any man has within him the power to reach his potential, and what he needs is Chapo, basically, because it's a lifestyle, it's a mindset, and if you apply it to your day-to-day life, you will succeed.
The wolf on top of the hill is not as hungry as the wolf coming up the hill, but the wolf on top of the hill, he has food when he wants it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's like the old, you know, it's like two in the bush is worth like a fox in the hen house. First and foremost, I consider us to be a lifestyle brand, a men's lifestyle brand, which, you know, like people will always criticize us and say stuff like, oh, 98% of your listeners are male. Well, yeah, that's called reaching your target audience.
I mean, you could be a woman, too. You can be a woman, but as long as you don't have genitals or have sex with anyone and just listen to Chapo Trap House, I think that counts. People ask me, Will, how did you go from being an intern at a novelty t-shirt company to founder of the 29th most successful Patreon account of all time? And the answer is, I hardly tried at all. I just, you know, didn't have sex. So
it's the only way to allow the mind gym to work, because it has to be focused 100% on the chapel mindset and lifestyle.
She's thinking about going and having decadent, you know, intercourse with random people. Then you're not focused.
We don't see gender.
No. Or race. Or anything. We don't see. Period. That's the way that we record the show. We all close our eyes and we just like create a mindscape. We're not distracted by the world around us.
Hey, like, okay, so the success win lifestyle brand that we are promoting, if you imagine it as a pyramid, the foundation of that pyramid is failure. And when you have a good, solid foundation of failure, you can erect a cathedral, a mind palace out of that failure. And we always say, what do we always say? Every failure is a success you haven't had yet.
Yeah, the bricks are failure, and then the mortar is not having sex.
What do John D. Rockefeller, Nikola Tesla, Thomas Edison, and George Washington have in common?
They all smoked weed.
That they also all got DUIs.
Okay.
And DUIs, like, we kind of think DUIs are, that's like the
shameful, bad.
It's bad, but it's the biggest thing you can overcome. So it's like a good sign. It's a good sign if you have a lot of DUIs. Most of our listeners have DUIs. That's like when the court orders you to go to rehab, and you listen to Eminem in rehab, and you're like one of the Eminem songs where he's like, I had to fail before I could succeed. And you're like, yeah, no, like that's me too. And when you fail at succeeding, you succeed at failing.
Yeah, and I'd say that having an internet troll dox you and like reveal that you are a member of several hentai forums online, that's a good way to sort of realize, oh, like this, everyone knowing that is terrible, but I'm still here. Even though, yes, I like tentacles. What about it? And that's very freeing to be able to say.
We've adopted the sort of wolf as part of our brand, but I think, like, you know, I think about a different animal. I think about the platypus. The platypus is the only mammal that lays eggs. It's also the only mammal that's poisonous. So it looks goofy, but it's one of a kind. So look stupid, but hold on to every failure and resentment and make it poison inside of you, and you'll be unique, like the platypus.
You'll lay eggs.
And you'll lay eggs that will turn into success. They'll hatch, and that's success.
Success eggs.
Resentment and failure are like fertilizer for the garden of success.
Where the eggs are sowed. It's a mixed metaphor, but that's also part of success win lifestyle. You lay the eggs in the fertile field of failure. And then they hatch a tree of victory.
They hatch into maize, which is maize. What the Indians call corn.
If you're willing to put in the work, then you deserve it. You deserve it. You deserve to succeed.
One, two, three, four, five, six, seven, eight, nine. It's the 10 crack commandments.
So as some of you may know, I work as a contract employee for a company called Cafe. And thank you, yes, for Cafe. And, this was a political gig. It's a website like News Roasted for Millennials. And I was somewhat press ganged into collaborating on a podcast with their chief political analyst. I don't think he needs that much of an introduction. He is a 30-year veteran of insider politics, both inside the Beltway and out. Everyone, Carl Digler.
Where are my fathers at? How is the deficit, everybody?
Well, Carl, you got your live show. It's hope it's all these people. Hope you all you wanted.
It's sort of like the Capitol Steps meets Woodstock.
I don't really know what either of those things are, but all right.
So who do we have today?
All right, so we have a live guest, a surprise guest, I suppose. He is he's a writer, commentator, analyst about British politics. And I believe he also works for the Israeli intelligence agency, was on there.
My father knows them.
All right. Everyone, please welcome Sam Chris.
Well, Carl, it's great to talk to you outside of the lawsuit that you currently have against me.
Well, part of legal strategy is meeting people outside the court to vibe them out, and that's kind of what we're doing right now.
I didn't realize you could file a lawsuit in The Hague.
There is a Hague family court.
I just want to let you know that my lawyers are in the audience and they're watching everything you do.
Oh, well, maybe they might learn something.
Oh, well, Sam, you wanted to talk about what just happened in the UK, the Labour leadership election, where Jeremy Corbyn just won
another
term.
Millions of women harassed.
The people have spoken. The people have spoken, and Jeremy Corbyn, by 62%, is Dumbledore.
I don't think Dumbledore harassed any women.
But he did harass Jews, and in that way, he's very much like Jeremy Corbyn.
Do they have those in England, or...?
Not anymore.
Ah, guess he is a reformer.
Now, could you tell us a little about the leadership challenge and the person that Corbyn just dispatched, Owen Smith?
Yeah, Owen Smith is a figure from the right wing of the British Labour Party. He's not so much a socialist as a pay pig, really.
Nothing? Some of the smartest people alive are Finn subs.
His main reason for wanting to be leader of the Labour Party was so that our lady Prime Minister, Theresa May, could call him a worthless worm at PMQs.
That's, nothing wrong with that when just a strong female leader just takes off her shoes and she walks all over you and you're a little pig. But he's an alpha male. Owen Smith is an alpha male. He's always Owen talking Smith, about doing the deed.
Owen Smith is an alpha male. He made his general message for his entire campaign the fact that I've got to cock me. I think the defining line of his campaign was the fact that he has the capacity to win because before he pulled his wife, he had to beat off 1,200 men and three women, which I think is also the audience profile here tonight.
So his wife is like 0.01% bisexual?
His wife is very slightly bisexual, and that's why he's a leader for the 21st century.
Well, bisexuality is sort of like the new sexuality because it's nonpartisan.
Why is it always about sexual psychosis?
It's not. I mean, I don't ever bring that up. I have my personal life, my struggles with the state, the way that they persecute a Holocaust against fathers, then I have my analysis.
I've been meaning to talk to you about this, Carl, because I'm here to talk about British politics, but I think I'm also here to talk about you. You know that you're a very sick man, right?
I'm one of the more regular people you'll ever meet.
Okay, well, I mean, I think I have a scientific test and might be able to determine this. The audience may or may not know that I've also read both the front and back cover of a book about Lacan, and I once punched Slavoj Žižek in the face. I put together a little test for you, Carl, that I think might help you discover a few more things about yourself. It's going to be a series of what appear to be abstract ink block kind of slides, and I just want you to look up at the screen here and just tell me what you see in each image. If I could have the first slide, please.
Slavery.
So how do you see slavery in this picture?
Yeah, I mostly see dots.
It's just dots, like black and white dots.
Yeah.
Bernie Sanders, the first thing you think about is slavery, then misogyny, and gender oppression.
You think a Jew is hiding in these dots?
We just see dots.
It's Bernie Sanders.
If I could get the next slide.
Tyranny.
That ink blot is tyranny.
A female judge represents tyranny, not because women are any less capable, but because if you read
the History of Family Court, published in 1983, third wave feminists were fast-tracked through family court systems to oppress men.
The History of Family Court, published in 1983. That was by the guy who did the Turner Diaries, right?
Yeah, I mean, you know, every author has a bibliography, but...
If I could get the next slide up.
That's my son. It's Colby.
Your beautiful round son.
My beautiful boy. He is as round as the day is long.
See, that's not normal.
I mean, Carl, usually the object of psychoanalysis is to allow the patient to work out for themselves what's really going on in their heads. But seeing as you've never been able to work anything out in your entire life, I think I'd just explain to you what's wrong with you, and then we can see where we go from there.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Carl, you're a big believer in the ability of words and language to kind of bring people together and transcend political divides, right?
I consider myself more like a Michelangelo type figure, except the Sistine Chapel is the budget deficit.
Well, I mean, obviously in Lacanian psychoanalysis, the signifier is always a replacement for an absent phallus. And I think this makes sense with you, Carl, because you are the most castrated man that has ever existed.
No, I'm not. No, no, that's wrong. Most, like most journalists, like my friends Michael Barbaro, Michael Smirkonish, Ron Fournier, fellow alpha males, I had a very normal family life growing up. I have never seen my mother. My father... My father spent most of my childhood on business assignments in Chile and Cambodia, as most children do. But no, I had a real Americana-type upbringing.
But I'm also very interested in the upbringing you're giving your son, your son that exists, your round son who is out there in the world to prove that you've had sex at least once.
There are other forms of proof.
So what does the sun represent?
Well, my personal theory is that as a symbol of Carl's sexual potency, the sun obviously represents the penis that he has lost. Now, ordinarily, a round sun would be more testicular in shape.
Yeah, yeah.
But for a man as physically and psychically deformed as Carl, it resolves itself into the shape you see above you right now.
Wow.
I do not appreciate your ad hominem, but I do kind of see something to your theory, you know? Okay, so I go into family court as the phallic symbol. Judge Tao puts me in a smaller guillotine-type device, and it's sort of like a circumcision gone wrong, and then I am alimony, child support, ankle monitors, they castrate me. But my phallic power lives on as my boy. Okay, there's something to this.
This doesn't make you go insane hearing this. Imagine if Lacan heard this.
I think Lacan did hear this. This is how he ended up like he did.
Do you want to see the next slide?
Go on.
Oh, no. Did you get into these slides?
Beauty. Eroticism. Togetherness, matrimony.
Well, Carl, it's been utterly horrifying talking to you.
Oh, wait, you do have, I think you have another slide. Oh, you have two more slides, one more after this.
Yeah, that's partisanship.
And the next one?
Muscles. Power. Honor. The third way.
It kind of does look like a muscle if you squint.
His entire body is like one big muscle. I like this last slide. If you could just keep it up. And if I could get a copy of it.
Well, I know he has one of you above his bed.
All right.
So that's about it, I suppose. Sorry, we didn't get to really discuss British politics, and it all became about Carl's, round penis.
The page three girl, are they, can you, like, call them?
The page three girls are now occupying number 10 Downing Street. They all live in the pantry.
Ah, now that is a leadership coup I can support.
Are you feeling okay? Because you had like you said 15 minutes before you had to take cat ear medicine.
I suffer from a few conditions. One of them is Habsburg ear bleeding syndrome. This is about as much time as I can give you due to the lunar cycle. It's a very normal thing to suffer from, but I will be returning to my healing cocoon, and it was very nice to meet a man from another country tonight.
Carl Diggler, everyone, thank you.
Okay, well, we've already gone over our time limit, but before we close out the show, there's something we have to do that, in fact, we are legally required to do as part of the lawsuit that we're currently involved in.
Filed in family court.
Yeah. Basically, we've been subjected to like a new echelon of the law that's referred to as Chew's Law.
It's a very wet form of law.
But according to Chew's Law, every one of our broadcasts...
It's part of admiralty law due to the moisture involved.
But as part of our settlement in Chew Court, we now have to provide a platform on our show for all of the people that we've bullied and harassed in the past. So we've created like a voicemail box, a complaints line for people to call, people who we've harassed and insulted in the past, to call in and vent their frustrations with us. We're not going to share them with you now in the Chapo struggle session. Can we play the first voicemail, please?
Please leave a message after the tone.
Greetings. This is Peter from ShareBlue Media. I was just returning from a game of outdoor summer hoops, as I am wont to play on a New York autumn day. My daughter, after seeing me cross over a white boy, as I do when I hoop, told me that she heard a podcast where the white male hosts denigrate the future first female president by saying that it is not normal to talk in this tone and that it is not normal to collapse in sweltering 80 degree weather. I have transcribed the audio of this podcast, sent it to my attorney for an upcoming libel lawsuit, and also am seeking the punishment of these hosts when they are sent to the camp.
Oh,
that does not sound like a good camp.
I'm sorry. We're sorry.
What camp?
Another lawsuit.
It's only going to get worse when he finds out we're Drews.
Ooh, yeah.
Can we play the next call, please?
Please leave a message after the tone.
You've ruined my reputation by turning my face into an object of mockery, plastering it on signposts, photoshopping me into photographs of Vietnam war crimes, and over female genitalia. I am not a joke! I demand you cease and desist using my face for your promotional materials and cease and desist contributing to America's decline through the cultural Marxist plot to import foreign hordes, and to cease and immediately desist slandering the good name of baseball, the fine gentleman's sport beloved by conservative intellectuals.
So glad that image is public domain.
Holy shit. The baseball crank actually is a lawyer.
It's true. I actually do like baseball, so I feel a little bad.
He sounds like a guy who calls into my show.
Next call, please.
Please leave a message after the tone.
Yo, it's your boy, Twitter user Young Tradcath. Calling to say, I heard you've been sneak dissing. Beef on the low. Talking shit about the Holy Father on your bitch-ass podcast? Denigrating the Blessed Virgin Mother? Keep that Catholic Church name out your mouth, fam. That's just played like gay adoption and single-child families. You out here talking about HBO, Netflix, fornication, and self-abuse like you're trying to be the next Martin Luther? Well, guess what? I see you, and I got my Tradcath shooters on deck. Brah! Brah! Keep talking shit, and we're gonna put the spotlight on you, and you're gonna get hit. Blah!
In nomine Patris et Filii et Spiritus Sancti.
He's not here, is he?
Yeah, we've had some problems. There's a guy, he works at the Free Beacon. You know, when I first met Matthew Walther at 16 is when I first met the world. He was the guy who would go to the movies and root for the bad guy. Except that movie was Spotlight.
Holy shit.
Next call, please.
Please leave a message after the tone.
Hello, my name is F. Wadsworth Cumswell, theater critic for Koch Brothers Tech Shelter A-481. I am currently calling from the teacup ride at Disney World, where I have been stuck for the past 6 days. I am using my dwindling cell phone data to register my complaint about the lewd, slanderous depravity of the Chapo Trap House podcast. You people are worse than the slavering frog hordes of Trump. You are worse than the abortion and Benghazi abetting Hillary men. These degenerates promote rampant abuse and dogpiling against principled conservatives who happen to be trapped in pedestrian conveyances. I am suing for emotional abuse, cyberstalking, and mocking a man wedged in a revolving door. Good day, sirs.
We're sorry.
Oh,
we're
wow.
Sorry.
Yeah, I mean, I spent 6 weeks at the top of a Ferris wheel, you know, and I understand.
But you wanted to be there.
At first, it got old. It got old quickly.
I consider being trapped in an elevator kind of like a disability, so I apologize for
ableism. We've been ableist.
Yeah.
It's fucked up.
Guilty.
We will do better.
Yes. Next call, please.
Please leave a message after the tone.
Hello, boys. This is Bill Buckley calling from the great beyond. While many cried at my departure from the physical world, I find my new accommodations much more fitting. Though it is quite hot here, and I have to share bedding with a host of Italians and more Slavic-looking Prussians, most notably Hermann Göring, I find the intellectual countenance of my new accommodations everything that the National Review should have been. But you have disturbed my rest in the afterlife by imitating me on an audio program in which you ascribe lewd activities to me on a sailboat. If you boys had any inclination towards the intellectual, you would perhaps know that the activities that take place on a sailboat are what happens when sexuality is blurred by the lines of the sea. Shout out, by the way, to that young boy Ross, that low-key thick boy from Harvard. Hope you can make it here soon, my boy.
As an English guy, let me just say, I love what he did with the teeth.
When you got dead people angry at you, you know you've really crossed
Seriously,
the line.
Though,
I'm sorry.
We need to launch an inquiry about what happens when you're old, right-wing, and your fucking teeth, man. I mean, between him and Giuliani...
Yeah, they look like they soak their dentures in a bedpan.
Yeah, they do. They all do. Literally all of them look like that. It's fucked up.
Next call.
Please leave a message after the tone.
I have been banned from the Chapo Trap House comment section for pointing out that they are whores for the Otis Elevator Corporation and biased in favor of steam engines when diesel engines are so obviously and categorically superior. Furthermore, Will Banneker is a known cheater in the Train Table Simulator 2014 community. He and Adam Pepsi have conspired with the TTS-14 GameFAQ moderators to ruin my reputation. I demand you deliver a public apology to me and to the diesel engines on my superior podcast, Chocolate Milk, which we can record in my basement in Essex County, New Jersey.
Look, okay, if Otis elevators aren't the greatest elevators in the world, then it's not for you, and very little in this world is.
Next call, please.
I do like Dyson Krupp elevators, but okay.
Pretty good. Leave a message after the tone.
Greetings and salutations, race traitors. This is Twitter celebrity and defender of Western civilization, Merovingian Rage, speaking. I am announcing my intention to cry havoc and let slip the dogs of war on the mongrel cucks of the Chapo Trap House. You have abused me and my alt-right brethren for the last time. You Chester and Jake while the precious heritage of our forefathers is destroyed by globalists and mud people. You imply that I am a quote-unquote turbo nerd who could not save the white race with quote-unquote a penis transplant from globalist porn star Ron Jeremy. But the day of reckoning is at hand. Soon you will grovel before me, renounce your treasonous ways, and tell me I'm cool. Come on, man.
I'm a little scared, I gotta tell you guys.
I gotta say, we have to do better. We have to start amplifying Aryan voices.
I mean, like, I'm a picked American, and I feel like more people need to respect
that. We are here to amplify the voices of Goths, Ostrogoths, Visigoths, Vandals, Franks, and every other obscure...
Huns, too. Don't forget Huns.
Yeah.
Shout out to my Etruscan homies out there. What?
Trapo Trap House. Is there an echo in here?
next call.
Please leave a message after the tone.
I'm calling the complaints line here at the quote-unquote Chapo Trap House to complain about an impression of me that one of your hosts does. It sounds like they're just holding their nose and talking in a high-pitched voice. That's not how I sound like. It's not how I sound like at all when I debate liberals and I destroy them. I would debate you and destroy you, but it's beneath me. Your show is multiculturalism, it's poison, it's anti-Semitic, and the Chapo Trap House has revealed itself as every bit the gunner dwellers, as the Trump fans or the Palestinians, who are not a real people, just like you're not a real podcast. This is Ben Shapiro saying, stop doing an impression of me, or I will debate you and destroy you.
I'm sorry, Ben.
Bring it on. That's what I say.
We're sorry, Ben.
I say, Ben Shapiro, bring it on.
I couldn't understand that. It didn't have any verbs in it.
Next call.
Please leave a message.
God, we've pissed off a lot of people.
Yeah, we really
fucking
have.
This is DiGreccio.
Oh, no.
I heard that you were impugning Portugal on your podcast. No. You make it sound like I always have the plots to fool the upset governor, but I am only trying to bring him back into the light of the Papa. I am beside myself as you've ruined my dinner of paella.
I can't, we've really offended a naval power.
It's okay. We're going to do like 3 or 4 episodes about Prince Henry the Navigator. It'll be okay.
Next call.
Please leave a message after the tone.
This is a communique from the Revolutionary Front of the Upper West Side, Marxist-Leninist faction, and their general secretary, Subcomandante Steve. We are calling out the petty booze shills of the Crapo Fash House, the CIA contract agent COINTELPRO stooges, are turning a generation of proletarians away from vanguard activism and towards reactionaries' triviality of memes and irony. This domestic gladio front is a classic psyop in coordination with the Pentagon, NATO, Benderist Nazis, ISIS, Vice Media, Cracked Magazine, and the reverse vampires of the International House of Pancakes. Capitalist running dog, lackey, comprador swine, anti-disestablishmentarianist, Hegelian, crypto-fascist, Gestapo, porn pixie.
Wow. They're mad. Jesus. I mean, okay, yeah. Did we buy all of our equipment to start the show with CIA slush funds? Yes.
Did I?
Like to think that once we did that, we like created our own thing, you know?
Yeah. Did I have a summer internship with Jabhat al-Nusra? Yes, I did. Everyone has a past, but you can write your own present.
Was I the guy who shot all those people in Kiev that led to the revolution that overturned the, you know, and allowed for NATO to take over and the Nazis? Yes.
Sam?
I think Chapo is beautiful because it's the only place where the American, the Israeli, the Russian, and the Chinese intelligence services all come together.
Oh, by the way, tip your bartender again. We meant to keep saying that.
Yeah. Tipping your bartender. I think we have one more angry phone call. Please play.
Please leave a message after the tone.
Good evening, harassers.
I have noticed that you have used my likeness to promote an event where my tormentors are performing, among other things, annotations of respected intellectuals like David Brooks. As such, I am filing a pro se lawsuit against the hosts of this event, the corporate hosts, everyone in attendance, everyone who retweeted anything about the show, as well as the creator of the Pepe Frog.
Okay, we're almost done, but I just genuinely want to give some thank yous. First of all, to you guys, everyone who came out.
Yeah, thanks very much.
It was fucking awesome. Thanks so much. You guys are great.
This is amazing.
Genius for hosting us.
Love that boy.
Love that boy. Love that boy. Love that boy. Love that boy.
Obviously, genius for hosting us in this live event. It's been awesome. Our producer, Brendan James, in the house. The bartenders, please tip them. The people who work the door, Sam, Chris, and God, through which all things are possible. But before we go, everyone here, Monday night, if you guys are free Monday night, come to Caroline's Famous Comedy Club on Broadway. We're doing a live commentary on the Democratic debate.
Two things. Happy birthday to my brother Sam. Congratulations to Alana.
Woo! Caroline's Monday night.
Caroline's
come see
Monday
us.
Night.
Thank you so much, everybody.
Thank you, Cleveland!